Did either of you see yourselves as founders or entrepreneurs before you launched your idea?
I think when I started to leave the big corporate world behind, I started to realize that I needed the freedom, that I liked the decision making, that I was a bit too impatient and probably a bit too edgy.
I always thought, oh my God, that is not for me. Then actually, as I've gone through my time in finance, it really became about actually all I am is a number in an organization. What impact am I having? And that actually became a really big point for me.
Let's talk about what practical steps you took to launch your MVP.
I went into Figma and started building what we thought would be the product we wanted to build. Our feedback was it was probably the biggest Figma prototype someone had ever seen. We also then got told it was probably a three-year roadmap we had managed to build in Figma. So we had started there, and then actually we went out and spoke to some investors, and they very much told us, hold on, don't go.
Can you tell us a little bit about your marketing on social media?
One thing, for instance, is we learned that our faces, which we really were against when we started, was the thing that got most likes. Right? We very much were like, no, we want to be credible. We want to be sharing industry stats. No, it's Nithika's and my face and us talking about why we're doing.
In today's episode, we are joined by Nithika Vyas and Elizabeth Prager, two friends that both have a background in finance and have joined forces to launch Isla Money. Isla Money is the Noom for finance. It's a digital personal financial trainer that helps individuals realize their life goals. Today, they both share why they launched Isla Money. They talk about working as friends and founders, the challenges that they faced on their startup journey so far, and they talk about their learnings from developing their first MVP and how they acquired their first customers. Welcome both. It's a pleasure having you on the She Founds podcast. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'd like to dive straight in. Let's first get to know you. It'd be great if you could tell us a little bit about your background. Nithika, why don't you go first?
Sure. So I did maths at university and then have spent the last 16 years in finance, investment banking, hedge funds, and then investment brokers, doing various different roles. It was during this time that I really got to learn about my finance. And in my spare time, I then also did a counseling foundation course as I try to work out, actually, how do I want to make an impact in this world? So that's a little bit about me. I'll pass over to Liz.
Cool. I also have about 15 years of experience, and that sort of goes to our story. We had a mutual best friend at university, and that's how our paths connected over the years. I then took a slightly different route. I went into life and pensions and then into private banking. That was actually the larger conglomerate bank that both Nithika and I worked at. And then I decided I didn't like the big corporate world and moved into a boutique strategy consulting firm where I got to travel the world and see some amazing things and do some amazing projects. I also started to seek the wanting to make an impact piece. And so I joined Asia's largest philanthropic organization as their director of strategy before then doing freelance work actually for various UN organizations and an innovative financing piece. But with all that being said, we are now the co-founders of Isla Money, which is a personal finance app. Essentially, what we are trying to do is put a personal trainer for your money, for your finances in your pocket to help you achieve your life goals.
Yes. I'm curious to know, did either of you see yourselves as founders or entrepreneurs before you launched your idea?
I'm happy to take that one first. I think for me, it's been an evolution. I think when I started to leave the big corporate world behind, I started to realize that I needed the freedom, that I liked the decision making, that I was a bit too impatient and probably a bit too edgy. And so while I never thought of myself as like the entrepreneur, the path has taken me there more from the sense of what I got happiness out of. Right. So more in terms of the ability to determine what I do, what I say yes to, where I spend my time and where I perhaps don't spend my time. So yes, over time, yes, but I didn't start out in that place.
If you had asked me when I first started working, I would have probably said no. And actually, that's coming from a family of entrepreneurs. So I've had a lot of influence of entrepreneurs in my life, and it's been great to see, but I always thought, oh my God, that is not for me. Then actually, as I've gone through my time in finance, it really became about actually all I am is a number in an organization, sometimes a large organization. What impact am I having? And that actually became a really big point for me. And then the idea of actually having that flexibility and being the person in charge has become a part that has been really interesting as an idea, especially for the flexibility and being able to drive a strategy I'm passionate about. So I think I originally then started looking at it from a, okay, how do I go into a counseling space and help make an impact in the mental health space? And then actually what Isla's doing is putting two of my passions in one of the finance piece, which I've grown to have a lot of experience in, as well as the mental health impacts to people and how we can go about bringing behavioral change.
Amazing. I love how the two have tied together. It would be great to hear the story of how you came up with Isla. But before we dive into that story, I know that you both know each other. Let's start with how you know each other and then how you came about Isla.
I'll let you go.
So I think Liz has also already briefly touched on this. We have a mutual best friend. So we actually went to university together, however, never actually met at university. I've in fact slept in Liz's bed a few times before actually meeting her, because I used to go up and visit our mutual best friend and she wasn't in town. So thanks, Liz, for the bed.
Best.
And we were very fortunate that our best friend got married very early and we were both bridesmaids. So we got to be friends for about 15 years now, I would say. We organized her hen do together and then met at the wedding. And so that's a little bit about how we met. And then I think your next question was how we then came about forming Isla.
Yeah, so I'm happy to go into that. We share a story and we have our own reasons as well, right? I think Nithika and I, as I mentioned, we worked at the same bank. And because you work in a financial services space, we also caught up and had conversations and said, hey, it's bonus time, what are you doing? And thinking about this, thinking about that, et cetera. And we also then realized that a lot of our friends weren't coming and saying, here's what I'm doing. What do you think? They were flipping it and saying, what should I be doing? And I think we realized that there was a couple of things. First of all, they didn't know, right? But even when they then knew, it wasn't enough to make them do, right? Mm. So there was this, I have the intention, I know I should, but unless you have somebody who's behind you going, come on, have you done this? Have you actioned what we talked about? They would just go, oh God, no. Ooh. And as we aged, we are showing our years, having been in the work space for God knows 15 years plus, your situation becomes a bit more complex, but you also have a bit more money to play with, et cetera. And we were realizing that actually this was more and more necessary and people did not have somewhere to turn to. And so that's where the idea of Isla came. We started to do quite a bit of customer research. So we first of all started with a questionnaire where we asked about 200 plus people what they would want, what they needed, what they were dissatisfied with in the current industry. And then we took that from there, did some in-depth interviews to say, what is it? Give us the lowdown. And then we started to ideate about what a potential product could look like. So that's the story behind Isla.
Thank you for sharing that, Liz. Nithika, would you like to add anything to that?
Yeah, for me, as Liz said, this was a common problem we saw with friends. But the other thing from my background is actually I came from a lower income background and hadn't actually thought about wealth or finances and wasn't necessarily taught that in the same way. And then coming into finance, especially in the hedge fund space, it became really evident just how much information the rich had to help create more wealth and just how much it was more talked about. And that disparity became really obvious, especially during COVID, where working on the mental health charity, you saw a lot of people calling in, being at desperate needs with their finances and that causing so much mental health stress and anxiety. And just being absolutely frustrated as to how that information wasn't available to everyone. And so that has become a bigger passion of dealing with these wealth inequalities, with these advice gaps that are out there. We are focusing on women to start with, but there is so much across all kind of social backgrounds as well.
100%.
And All this came about from a phone call, is that right?
So, yes, Bavish is referring to the fact that actually every now and then Liz and I spoke about doing something together, thought about our ideas, and actually I was on holiday when Liz and I were just doing a catch-up, as we did as friends, just to see how things were going in life, and both of us getting to the stage being like, yes, we want to make more of an impact. Is this the right time for us to start working on something together? Mm. And at that time, I was part-time, so I had Fridays off. So it initially started with a catch-up conversation with me in the hallway of a hotel and us agreeing, okay, let's spend Fridays talking about our idea a little bit more and seeing where we could get. I actually don't even think even in the first week we managed to keep just to a Friday. We are both the sort of people that get very passionate very quickly. And before you knew it, we were talking at least multiple times a week. And this idea just snowballed from there.
Yeah. But I think that's the way it's supposed to be. Not just when you're an entrepreneur, but when you love something or when you really think there's a problem to be solved. It's good that we didn't just stick to Fridays.
Oh gosh, we've never got anywhere in that time frame.
So the next question that I'm going to ask you is two-sided, and you're both friends. I would love to know how you set your boundaries as friends and still manage to like work as co-founders, because I imagine that there might be some friction working together closely and being friends for 15 years.
So Nithika is far more diplomatic, so I'm going to let her answer this. And then I'll add the spice at the end, okay?
So I think this was something we went in very aware of when we first started talking about working together. But one thing, this is where I'm very diplomatic. I think one thing we're both very good at being is very straightforward. We don't have any barriers to our language as such. So when we first discussed it, we were both like, well, is this going to work? What is this going to have as an impact to our friendship? Can we actually make this work? And actually, some of the things that we were apprehensive about, i.e. how different we are in our personalities, has actually probably worked in our favor when it comes to our kind of business acumen and where we go and our strengths. So I very much say we are yin and yang. We have such different ways of working. The best example is I follow that Indian stereotype of always being late, whereas Liz is very much German efficient, on time. Yeah. Ironically, not today. I was on time and you weren't. Maybe I'm rubbing off on her. And she's 100%. Rubbing off on me. So actually, we work really well because we both have different strengths and we can put them together and actually just trust each other to go off on our own different paths. Another example is she's great with presentations. I am better on Excel and with the numbers. And we're just like, yep, I will make a whole Excel tabs that say Liz to make pretty, because that's not her only role. She's definitely able to do more, but I appreciate that's not my strength and she will make it look far prettier than I will.
And is this something that you just worked out while you're working together?
I think a bit of both. I'm always amazed at how similarly and then how completely differently we think, right? And what's really funny is those moments that we sit there and go, oh my God, I really love that you got there, because I really wasn't going in that way and whatever. We've got the same exam question in front of us and we're ending up in completely different places. I think we did learn it as we go. We have really open conversations about it. But then the other thing that I think, Nithika, you haven't mentioned is we also do have moments where we go, okay, this phone call is a friend phone call, right? Like, I need you to listen to me as a friend right now, and I do not need you to listen to me as a co-founder or as a business. This is just Liz needs a rant about whatever, right? The kids, the whatever. It can be anything. And that is a very distinct conversation, and we try to keep it that way, and we try to create the space for that as well, because it is important to not forget that at the root of all of this is a friendship.
Sorry, just to add to that. So I think actually being friends, though we were apprehensive, is actually really helped, because we can have such honest conversations that actually maybe wouldn't come across as well with a partner you just met or are just getting to know.
Great. You just mentioned something important to ask, especially on a podcast which is aimed at women. You mentioned that you have children. How do you go about managing your time as being co-founders and having children? Then do you mind sharing how old they are?
So I have almost She's two, but she's almost three, and a four-year-old, right? I can't even do my fingers anymore. How do I manage it? I have an incredible partner who is pretty hands-on, and so that really helps. There are parts of my day that are sacred that I just don't take calls in, and we either don't schedule calls or Nithika takes them. Nithika is essentially their godmother, auntie, second mother, God knows what else, because every time she's at our house, which is a fair amount, the kids are in bed with her at 5 a.m. So how do I manage? I do my best. It's not always perfect, but you have to create the space, and you also then need to have the support system around you, which is for me, the partner and parents-in-law and babysitters, et cetera, to say now is the time where mommy's working.
Mm. Can we go through how you transitioned from full-time employment into being full-time founders?
Yes, I'm very excited to have done that transition just recently. So for the first year-ish or so, I was doing this alongside a day job, and I then finally pulled the plug September, October to quit, and I've then had to work a 6-month notice period. So as of the last month, I am now full-time founder. And don't get me wrong, it was a hard mindset shift. We came up with the idea. We knew what we wanted to do. It's like, how much traction have we seen so far? When is the right time to give up the day job? And it, for me, it really became about being confident in what we're trying to achieve and then being confident in my own finances and my own position to say, can I take this risk? And is this the right time for me to take this risk? Which I'm very happy to say it was. And so off we go. And then it's then just been allowing us to have that space to actually fully grow.
Yeah, I think for me, the transition's been a bit less stark because I moved into a freelance role, or I moved into freelance when I was pregnant and moved into a different country. And what that, I think for me, the comfort that gave me was there's always room for good people if you really need. And you can make it work when you don't have a steady income. So it's been a much more gradual transition for me, not quite as stark, but a lot of what Nithika said is very true. Having that financial security to say, actually, I know that I have the ability to cover costs and I'm not going to end up in a place where I'm dependent on an investment round or dependent on a time where it's like, oh God, it's really scary now. Having that built up really helps.
How have you divided your roles as co-founders?
I think Nithika's already alluded to where our strengths lie. And given where we are in our journey and the business model that we have, which is a direct-to-consumer, so a business-to-consumer product, we essentially see there being two key areas, right? The one of them is the product build and the tech build-out that sits behind that, versus then the growth and marketing engine, if you want. So the how do we portray ourselves? How do we build our brand? How do we get in front of the right people at the right time, make opportunities, et cetera? And we've divided and conquered along those lines. Doesn't mean that we're not inputting into each other's segments and sections. We 100% build that check in at all points. But we've said somebody needs to take the lead on X and somebody needs to take the lead on Y. And so we've split it like that. Mm.
Let's get into the nitty-gritty of how you actually went about building your app. So you both mentioned you came up with this idea. Let's talk about what practical steps you took to launch your MVP. And what is an MVP?
Okay, so MVP is a minimum viable product. You saw us both giggle when you asked this question because we get passionate and we go overboard. I think that's one thing we both have in common. We first started, and as most people do when they start thinking about a business idea, everyone's build a prototype, and then everyone starts mentioning the same company that you should be using, Figma. Build your prototype in Figma. And so off Liz and I went into Figma and we started building what we thought would be the product we wanted to build. Our feedback was it was probably the biggest Figma prototype someone had ever seen, which we took as a great compliment. I'm not sure he actually meant it as a compliment, if I'm honest. We also then got told it was probably a 3-year roadmap we had managed to build in Figma. So we had started there. And then actually we went out and spoke to some investors, some friends who were in the VC space. And they very much told us, hold on, don't go and spend your money here. Don't go build the app straight away. Go low code, no code. So I'll hand over to Liz to say where we went to from there.
Yeah. And I think we, at the very beginning, we were like, no code, no code. What on earth is this? Like, we do not come from this background. But essentially, we got told, try and be as scrappy as you can, right? Try and build it as, I call it matchstick man, right? Or matchstick woman. Try and glue some matchsticks together by sticking stuff into blue tack. Make it really manual, et cetera. It does not need to scale. It does not need to be slick. And just see if people will use it and how they use it and whether they'll use it and what the feedback is. So what we did is we created about a 16-week journey, and you answer some questions on a questionnaire, and you then start getting WhatsApp messages off the back of it, right? So this wasn't an app. This was super, this wasn't even low code. This is no code, I think. And then we just started to go to friends and family and be like, hey guys, can you just start using this and give us feedback? We have changed this journey, it feels like a million times. It's probably not quite as many, but it is a lot off the back of that feedback. But we have grown that user base substantially. And we said after 100 people, we would start charging for it just to see if people would actually start paying. And lo and behold, we have a plus 25% conversion rate, even on our scrappy matchstick person MVP. And that has given us the credibility to actually say to A, investors, B, incubation labs, et cetera, we're a player who knows what we're talking about because we've proven a need that people are willing to pay for. But it's also given us the comfort to now go and start actually looking at what does an app look like in this space. So how do we build an app to make this more professional, more what we wanted it to be in the first place?
And during that journey, what would you say were the main challenges that you faced as non-tech founders?
For me, it's been two or three things. One of them is always going back and listening to the customer. And when I say listening to the customer, it's not always what they say, it's what they do. And going, what's the unsaid stuff that we need to listen to and then action, right? And I guess that it's been a great learning to get into that. But equally, it's something that we're now very aware of. We have to build in the right kind of data analytics in the back so that we have that information so that we can use it better. So that was number one. The second thing is that as a founder, you always have this crazy big vision, this like you need to dream big in order to do what you're doing. And the second challenge has been to take that giant vision and narrow it down and narrow it down and narrow it down some more and still prove value and then narrow it down even more, because the next step of whatever you're trying to build has to be the smallest slice of whatever you're trying to do. And really, that's been the second biggest challenge for me, at least.
Yeah. As most people say, product market fit, which were words that meant nothing to me before we started. And yet that's the only words I hear at the moment. And it's so relevant. Everyone's saying, actually, where are you starting? Narrow the product even more to your very small customer client segment.
You mentioned when you were giving your answers earlier on that people were giving you advice. So you were going to people to ask, I guess, presume, to figure out what to do, what steps to take, and what they thought about your idea and where you should start. Like, so who were the people that you got advice from on what your journey should look like?
There's been some people that we've been lucky enough to meet through our careers who've acted as pretty good sounding boards, right? And they have been really nice in terms of introducing us to others. There's certain people from a tech perspective who have been that anchor, the you could be doing this, you should be looking at that. This is easy. Just go look at XYZ. This is hard. Go find, talk to person XYZ. So it's almost, that was one. We've got some friends in the VC and the angel space. So we've started to have some conversations with them, not to say, please invest in us, but actually to go, okay, so we are on our, you know, billionth version of our pitch deck and we still don't think we've nailed it. Can you give us some feedback? What would you be looking for? What are the metrics that you would need, right? Would you be recommending that we go to this kind of investor or that kind of investor? And the same from then a marketing side, right? So we, the marketing and then a behavioral science side, where we've actually looked at professionalizing that a bit more, specifically the behavioral science side, because it's such a component of our product, right? What we're trying to do is really create behavior change. So from day dot, we essentially said we need someone, a partner with super credibility in this space. And so we reached out to both LSE, where I'm an alum, and they then also introduced us to City University. And we're working with them from a behavioral science and that financial psychology perspective. So that's been really helpful, not just in terms of growing our traction, but in terms of getting the skills and capabilities into an advisory capacity, not like a full-time team capacity, but the ability to bounce ideas, et cetera.
I suppose in terms of like maybe your friends you can go to for free advice, when you're, say, talking to professionals from like City or LSE for advice, is it free time that they're giving you, or do you have to pay them, or is it some kind of negotiation?
Yeah, so we've been super lucky, and God knows how. Sometimes things in life just work out for you. So it turns out that many of these universities, the professors, if you're willing to work with them and also share information and don't take up too much of their time, they're very happy to help. And they also, so for LSE, for instance, they actually have a program in their marketing masters where now we have a group of students. So we're part of a formal program, which we applied to, where we've got a group of students helping us define aspects of our marketing strategy. So that is a program that's actually open to many other businesses, and it's free. For City, it's been an interesting one because they have PhD students in this space, and we were actually able to essentially get a sort of semi-grant arrangement with the PhD department for her to do some research with us and essentially not just lend us her expertise, but also there is a bit of a tit for tat. She's able to further the field, which is awesome. We think that's great as well. So it's looking for those mutually beneficial partnerships where all parties get something out of it. That's been really helpful.
Thank you for sharing that. And I really like it because I think sometimes you just think you just have to pay people with money. And I like how you're thinking out of the box. Yeah.
We're trying. You also learn, I think you learn some of this on the way. I didn't know that half of this stuff existed. So it's about being open when you go into these conversations. It's asking for help, right? And it's not, like I said, being abusive of time, but equally going, how can I help you?
Yeah.
How does this become beneficial for you? And people are always willing to help. And if they're able to see a benefit for them, I think then you can find partnerships that work.
And I think it's also about finding the people who are equally as passionate about what you're trying to do, whichever element. And actually, you'd be surprised then the people who are willing to give up some time for it.
We've spoken about some of the challenges that you faced and you had to overcome. In this beginning journey, when you don't know anything about tech, you both come from a finance background. If you maybe step back to the point where you had the idea, if you had a magic wand, what would you want your journey to look like?
Ooh, I think we would have probably wanted to automate our current journey a lot quicker than we did, as is in, I think we were just finding our way along the journey, which has been great, and we've been able to adapt with feedback, but it's actually taken up a lot of our time over the last 6 months because an element of it has been quite manual. And so actually being able to automate that would have been really helpful to help us actually just have time to focus on other pieces.
Can you expand a little bit more on that?
So the WhatsApp messages we were sending, as much as in the future we want that to be all automated and a level of bots sending them, at the moment it's very much Liz or I sending these WhatsApp messages. Now we have a journey planned out, but everything that's personalized has been us. And so we are there Monday, Wednesday, Friday, sending messages to everyone who's on our journey. And yes, we've made it as efficient as we could, but it has been manual.
I'm smiling because I downloaded that app, I filled out the form, and I have been getting WhatsApp messages. So now as you guys personally sending me messages is really, really cool to know. Okay, great. Yes. So thank you for sharing that. I think it's really important that to just highlight there that in the beginning, things might be manual. So as a technique, that's called like the Wizard of Oz technique, where you don't invest too much on the tech because tech is really expensive, but you make the user feel like they're getting something that is automated, that feels like a real product, to test your solution. And that's exactly,
we have mastered that technique. The amount of people who, because part of what we've done is offer this either for free or heavily discounted, right? And we say in advance, this is because we want people's feedback, right? We are learning, and so your feedback is valuable to us, hence the discount, right? The amount of people who've said to us, I didn't realize that I could actually just ask any question or that I could even respond, has been incredible for us, right? And so it's been super interesting just also understanding, again, user behavior, because that is super insightful for us to go, okay, what do we need to change? How do we remind people? How do we give them this tailored experience? And how do we make it super clear that they can, in our instance, interact with the bot? Yeah, we've mastered the Wizard of Oz.
It'd be great to go through in detail on how you got your 10 customers and grew that to, well, let's start with number one, your very first customer. How did you get your very first customer, then your 10, and then your 100?
Yeah, so I think, again, we learned as we went. So we created this form and then the WhatsApp journey. And actually the first, I would say, 15 to 20 users were pretty much only people that we knew. So personally, that we knew, that we had met, who we'd said, here's the link, please try it. We were also trying to hyper-personalize it at that point. And we learned very quickly that hyper-personalization was like not Wizard of Oz manual possible. This was like, I don't know, La La Fairyland, Puff the Magic Dragon. I don't know what the nomenclature is, but it wasn't going to work. And so we then created the journey that we have. And what was really interesting for us to see was that almost after we started to put in this journey, and we got to, I would say, about 40 customers-ish, all of a sudden there were names on there where we were like, do you know this person? No. Do you know? No. Okay, we don't know these people. And so what was happening, we thought, was that either social media or referrals or events that we were speaking at were probably getting people to us, right? That was or features on websites and or media and podcasts. We then instituted a referral code in the app. So we asked people for feedback and we said, please, if you like this, or in the journey, if you like this, please send it on. And we actually gave people a referral code, as in, I can see that Nithika's referred this, or I can see that Bubbish's referred this. And that's been a way for us to start to see that the referral mechanism works. And equally, we started to then be very conscious about our marketing and PR. So to start to say, we want to get into various print medias, we want to try and be at events, we want to try and get to podcasts, etc., so that we can start to actually grow our brand. And it's then less of a sales pitch, but it's a building credibility, making ourselves known, hoping that people will start to say, oh, actually, this is something that I need, I resonate with this, etc. And we have seen that actually does work. So there's, and funnily enough, we see it not just in product usage. We also see it in terms of people reaching out, being like, oh, I see you're doing XYZ. I'd love to talk to you because I am a developer, or because I have this kind of skill, or because your mission resonates. So all of a sudden, or the other one is recruiters. We're getting more and more recruiters reaching out.
Love that. And it reminds me of something that I actually posted about recently, which is I went back to revisit Simon Sinek's Why. And in that Why, I love that, the TED talk that he gave. And in that, he's talking about how you need to always communicate with your why first, because that's what's going to attract your audience and your team and partnerships. And you can see that you have a practical example of where leading with your why works.
Yeah, we try. And I think we're on a mission to close the wealth gap, right? So it's a big problem. And there's so many people that suffer from it. And there's so many people it resonates with. So it's been awesome so far.
So it sounds like you're wearing many hats, including the social side. Can you tell us a little bit about your marketing on social media?
Honestly, trial and error. We always say, so I opened an Instagram account because of Isla. I didn't have one. My mother was more active on Instagram than both Nithika started. And so we like with everything that you do as a early stage startup founder, you test. You have a hypothesis and you test. And then you look at the numbers and you go, oh, that worked. Let's do more of that. Or you go, oh, no, that really didn't work. Let's not do that. The great thing about social media is that if it's really crap, the algorithm doesn't support it. So it essentially disappears off into the nether, wherever is great. But one thing, for instance, is we learned that our faces, which we really were against when we started, was the thing that got most likes, right? Got most shares, got most follows, got most all of that. We very much were like, no, we want to be credible. We want to talk about, we want to be sharing industry stats. We want to be doing all this. No, it's Nithika's and my face and us talking about why we're doing this, how we deal with our money, the sort of things that we hear about from our users or people we speak to. That is the, we call them conundrums. So those are the sorts of things that really resonate. And then as with everything, we get feedback. Honestly, we just get feedback all the time. The thing I find being an entrepreneur is you are constantly learning something new and you're constantly there for, at least we are, asking how we can improve, asking ourselves and giving each other that feedback, but equally going out to people who are like, Bhavisha, you're a product developer. You're trying our thing, right? Give us the feedback. Tell us what we should be thinking about, because that is the sort of stuff that really helps. And that openness to feedback helps you evolve.
Let me get this right. So on social media, you got feedback from your post. Did you ask for that feedback from your community that started following you or people that liked you? Was it like direct messages or just unsolicited feedback?
Honestly, a bit of all of the above. Obviously, again, you start with friends and family. Part of it is the hard stats, right? So the how many, if you look at Instagram, it gives you like an insane amount of stats, how many people have followed it, looked at it, saved it, visited your profile, clicked external links, what's your engagement rate relative to competitors. It's incredible when you start to get the stats. Does it make a difference posting at 12 versus at 6 p.m.? Yes, it does. These little things you learn as you go. Plus, yes, we have found people in that space, so in the marketing, in the PR, in the social media space, and just gone, please troll our profile, tell us what we're doing wrong. Yeah, or tell us what we're doing right as well. It's not like we're only looking for what we're doing wrong. And then I would say the other thing, which we probably haven't mentioned, is we actually got into an incubation program. And I found that super helpful, partly because it opens up doors to specific skills and capabilities that we don't necessarily have, either in our network or between the two of us. And the other thing is it gives you a different kind of sounding board because it's professional people that deal with startups all the time and startups that are on the same journey who are willing to give you that sort of feedback when you're, so I always say we sometimes get stuck in wood for trees for wood, right? And you need that external sort of, no, you need to look at this from this angle or that angle or whatever. And that's been super helpful. I don't know if you'd like to add anything.
So I guess the only other thing with social media is there is so many different channels. It's working out the right channel for you when it comes to social media. Is it Instagram? Is it LinkedIn? Is it Snapchat? Is it whatever, any of them, YouTubes? And just working out actually where is your market? And we're still playing that game. We're still trying to work out actually which media works best on which outlet. Where are we going to get the most actual customers who are interested in our product? I think the one thing that's inevitable and what we've learned along the way is however we may feel about social media, it is such a big part of a B2C product experience that you just have to go with it.
And how did you feel about putting yourselves on social media? Because you mentioned that people engaged with you as people more than stats and data, etc. So how did you feel about that?
I think that for both of us, this has been something that we found quite hard. I think we both enjoy being people's people. So we are both great when it comes to going to events and one-on-one. The idea of having our videos online hasn't been something that necessarily either of us have ever done in our personal lives. And suddenly everyone is seeing me on a weekly basis on Isla Instagram. It's just been hard. We are also not the most girliest of girls when it comes to thinking about, say, our hair, our makeup, what we're wearing. It's not something that's necessarily come naturally to us. And so it's just taken a bit of time to say, how are we coming across? What are we doing? And getting comfortable with that while still trying to be ourselves. We don't want to be anyone else. We want to still be authentic.
Yeah. And I think for me, it's also going, there's certain boundaries, right? So not that we ever would, but I was very clear, my kids will never feature as an example, right? And that's also a personal role that we have. So it was like, it's a great selling point. Everybody loves talking about kids, et cetera, but they don't belong in a business. They do not belong on social media. So there's certain lines which we draw. And I think it's about always, the other thing for me, going back to what Nithika said, is it's course correcting on the way and going, that didn't feel too good, or that really didn't work for me. Let's not do that again. And that's okay. As long as you keep the conversation open and honest, then that's okay.
Yeah, so important, so important. I'm glad that you said that you had to do this and that's what you found worked, because I think, just speaking from personal experience, I think it's something that's quite overwhelming. You don't want to put yourself on social media. It's just so cringy. But then eventually you realize that you have to, but your competitors are out there and they're on social media, or it's like you said, it's B2B and that's where your customers are.
One thing that we also do is we try and be clear about what's a personal brand versus what's a business brand. And we recognize that it's a bit spaghetti and it's all a bit mixed up. We're not silly, but at the same time, there are certain things where we're like, this belongs on this channel only because this is where it belongs. And so our two big channels are Instagram and LinkedIn. And there's certain content which belongs on Instagram. It just doesn't belong on LinkedIn. And that's okay. And vice versa. There are certain things that we can then post on our personal LinkedIn, which probably doesn't, it builds our credibility in the space and it drives traffic, but it doesn't necessarily belong on the Isla content, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I was recently seeing some stats shared. I think it might have been at a talk by Female Founders Rise, and they were showing how actually people follow people more than brands. So the community following figures, like personalities, was much bigger than their brands.
And I think that's one thing we've learned along the way. Actually, as Liz mentioned, it's not our stats that are getting people listening. It's the feelings. What feelings are we evoking? Are we making you feel empowered? Are we actually getting people feeling guilty that they haven't looked at their pension? Feelings driving so much more than just cold hard facts.
And how did you figure out those feelings? Was it just what feelings you should be evoking? And because it's a different way of thinking as well. And I imagine if you're from finance, was it something that was a bit of a hurdle to try and figure out, be more feeling focused? Or is that part of your role as being in finance, something that you were used to already?
You know what? I think sometimes it's knowing what feelings. So actually in our questionnaire, we ask people, how do they feel about their finances, as one of the first questions. Now, it has been great working with LSE because they were able to help us see that some of our engagement came from people who feared their finances. And so we have most engagement on our beta journey from people who are fearful of their finances. However, then it's taking that information and saying, what does that mean? I can't prey on someone's fear, like that's not going to cause action. How do I use that fear and turn it into a positive emotion and help get that message across? So I think for us, it has been one, using some of our intuition, using some of my counseling psychology background, but very much also working with LSE and City University saying, look, this is what we're finding. What does this mean? How do we translate this so that we are very effective? Because actually, ultimately, in our long-term solution, that's the part we really want to differentiate on, being able to close the intention action gap as well by saying, how do you need to receive that message? What will make you act on it? And this will be different for different people based on their kind of their view of the world, their personalities. And we really want that to be a part of our solution. So we spend a lot of time thinking and analyzing this.
Yeah. And the other thing I would say is it's a bias misconception that we all have, that money is rational and cold and emotionless. One thing that we always talk about is, there's two things that we always talk about. One of them is your money behaviors are set by the age of 7, as with many other behaviors, so not just your money behaviors, which is really early. So there's lots of introspection that you need to sometimes do to go, why am I feeling or why am I doing certain things that perhaps aren't serving me? And the second thing is that in our brains, money actually sits in the same place as, I call it drug, sex, and rock and roll, the sort of dopamine center where we eat chocolate and get high, or where we crave sweets, or where we, all of that. So it is so intrinsically linked in our anatomy, right? Something in our biology that is emotional, right? That is irrational. It's just that for some reason we seem to think that actually, no, we need to be cold and rational and I don't know. That's the noise.
Yeah, I think I get my feelings about like finance and stuff from, I don't know, the publications like the FT or some kind of wealth journal that's not the most exciting journal to be learning about finance from. Yeah. Interesting. Thank you so much for sharing that. That was really interesting. Anything else before we move on to the next question?
No, I think that covers lots.
Okay, great. So as we get ready to conclude this session, I do have one final question before a little lightning round of questions. For our audience listening today, our founders or aspiring founders, what tips would you give to help them progress in their journey?
So I think the main tip is just go for it. I think a lot of people who are aspiring founders have an idea, and there is so many reasons why you shouldn't, or so many blockers against it. Same way as with your money. But there is that element of you're just going to have to go for it. And I think my biggest learning over the last year has been, actually, things don't have to be perfect. You just need to get going. Our rough and ready approach has got us a lot further than us building that perfect app. It's a very adaptable space. Making mistakes is going to happen, and it's okay. I think it has to be that so what approach, just get going, because that is the main part.
Yeah, and I think for me, I would add to that, it's always listen to the audience, the customer, the people you're trying to serve, right? Go in with...
I'd love you to recommend a book or a resource or a magazine that you're reading that you would recommend to our audience. It doesn't have to be startup related. It could be to do with anything like cooking or music, whatever you want.
In terms of books, just because it's so linked to what we're doing, and I do genuinely believe it, and I thought it was really impactful, Money and Psychology, I think it's a great book.
Liz? Yeah, I would add, in terms of books, and these are just some of my favorites, the Malcolm Gladwell stuff, be it Outliers or be it Blink or Tipping Point. Tipping Point particularly, I think, is interesting for startups. In terms of a podcast, and I am a podcast fiend, so I'm probably a good person to ask for this, it's actually Adam Grant's Think Again. I love the interviews. I always get something out of it, even for the work that we're doing in a startup, right? He speaks to super interesting people who've either been on a similar journey or who are professors or behavioral scientists or whatever in their space. And you can always sort of go, oh, there's a little something, there's a nugget in there for me.
Yeah, in terms of podcast for me, I love Esther Perel. And this is also one of Liz's favorites as well. Where do we begin? Which goes into relationships and actually does a real life counseling session with two people. She actually then also took it into the workplace as well, which I thought was amazing.
Oh, that's so interesting. Definitely going to check that out.
It's Work is what it's called.
Okay. I'll try and find the link and link it in this podcast. So next question. What is one piece of advice that somebody has given you that has served you well?
I always talk about the postcard my mother sent me when I was going through my God knows, like, 20 career crisis, the should I stay here or should I go into my next job? She sent me a postcard saying, if plan A doesn't work out, there's still 25 other letters in the alphabet. And I have to say, it shouldn't symbolize lack of commitment, but it should give you a sense of this hypothesis testing. If hypothesis A doesn't work out, move on to the next one. Try it. Keep going. You will find the plan. You will land on your feet. It will work. You just need to keep trying and you just need to figure out what works. But that's been one for me.
So the one that actually, again, has come from my mom, but it's you can do it. You can achieve anything as long as you have the positivity and the mindset to allow you to do so. And actually that translates quite well to an Albert Einstein quote, which is one of my favorites as well, is you haven't failed until you stop trying, which I think is a great message to have.
Yeah, definitely one for helping to build the resilience, I think. And finally, would you be able to share one self-care ritual that you guys do to help you stay sane in this journey?
I will let Liz go first because hers is very evident for her.
So I run and I don't do well if I don't run, and then I need chocolate. So I always say I eat to run and run to eat. That is definitely one. I have been, or family members of mine have been known to tell me to go for a run because I'm getting so annoying. So that would be my individual. I would say the two of us, because I think it's important to also have the self-care again, going back to co-founder friends, is we try and regularly take evenings out to say, okay, now we're going to just sit and have dinner and a bottle of Prosecco, wine, whatever, and shoot the shit. Sorry, I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say that, but solve the problems of the world that are not business related. So that is also something.
Great, thank you. Nitika?
And for me, it is actually taking that time with friends and family. Like, connections mean a lot to me, and actually having that time gives me the grounding. Our list of things to do is for so long, forever long, and actually making sure I've made time for the people who are important to me is a big thing, because otherwise that turns into a guilt, which is less helpful.
If people want to find you, how would they go about doing that?
So the easiest way is probably Instagram or LinkedIn or our website. The Instagram handle is @AilaMoney, A-I-L-A money, all in one word. Similarly on LinkedIn, we are also AilaMoney.com online. If you want to email us, it's hello@AilaMoney.com. So also pretty simple. And then it's obviously Nithika and Elizabeth on LinkedIn.
And if you are interested in trying our beta, feel free to do that. Is on our Instagram and our website as well.
Great. I definitely recommend it because I've already started getting messages and it's making me think. Sure. What's next for you guys? Anything you want to share on that front?
We are getting ready for demo day at the incubation program that we're at. So there's a bit of getting ready for a fundraise and thinking through what that looks like. And then Nithika, I think it's probably worth you sharing product side of things.
Yeah, so I'm currently learning very much new skills of how to app develop, but do appreciate our end stage app is not going to be fully developed by me. So we are also, one, developing what that looks like for now and getting the app ready, version one, and then looking for a tech lead who can help us build the final stage app as well and come join our team. So if anyone's interested, let us know.
Amazing. You have some exciting things ahead of you. Thank you so much for today.
Thank you. It's been lovely speaking to you.
Likewise, and good luck for everyone who's starting out.
If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast episode today, please do hit the subscribe button and share this episode with like-minded connections. I'd also like to take this opportunity to let you know that I'm sharing knowledge on how to build tech products. If this sounds like something that's going to be helpful to you, please subscribe to the SheFiles newsletter. The link will be in the show notes.